Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lifanov El Esav Achiv Arza Seir Sede Edom. And Yaakov sent, let's leave the word Malachim for the time being without a translation, before him, to Esav, his brother, to the territory of Seir, Sede Edom, that territory that was Esav's. OU Israel presents...
In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayishlach. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 14th day of Kislev, 5776, corresponding to November 26th, and being the fourth Thursday of November, in the United States, and I don't know where else, it is celebrated as Thanksgiving Day. I remember fondly as a child, whenever the topic of Thanksgiving came up at home, my parents would basically say, for Jewish people, every day is Thanksgiving, because in our prayers, we thank God on a daily basis, more than once a day. So we never really got into Thanksgiving. My mother occasionally would make a meatloaf in the shape of a turkey. No, that was in the shape of a Chanukiah. She would make something for the Shabbat following Thanksgiving, but it was not a practice in our family to celebrate with a fancy Thanksgiving dinner. On the other hand, it is a discussion of long, long time about the Jewish attitude in the United States towards Thanksgiving. And pretty much of all the national holidays on the calendar, Thanksgiving is one of the few that Jews have always felt comfortable being part of and have gotten into it in various degrees. Many shuls have Thanksgiving dinners, and here in Israel, AACI, the Association of Canadians, of Americans and Canadians in Israel, has, I didn't see an announcement for this year, but has always had a Thanksgiving dinner with turkey and all the trimmings. And it is not generally considered in, let's say, call it mainstream Torah orthodoxy or Judaism, to consider there to be a problem of b'chukotehem, following the ways of the non-Jews, because this was something that was based on a sincere thank you to God. And we believe in that, and we respect that, and that's the way it is. Of course, celebrating it with special football games is an American tradition as well. So it's not just turkey and whatever. So wherever you are, you do what you do. I mentioned earlier in reading the first verse of Vayishlach that I would not translate Malachim. I will, not exactly at this moment, but after we say Tehillim Kuflamed Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shimavakoli tihyena aznecha kashuvot lakol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmarya Adonai mia'amod ki imcha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Kiviti Adonai kivita nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai Mishomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fidut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara v'ashivya, ha'omedim mebein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem, mitzara l'yirvacha u'meafela l'ora, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Last week, when I introduced Achenu, I spoke about Jonathan Pollard's imminent release, which was last Friday, and the mixed feelings that many people have about it. I have taken my direction from the Pollards themselves in a personal request to us at Torah Tidbits, and that is to keep listing the number of days, as we've done for years, of his imprisonment. I made a alteration of that, which I have to check with the Pollards to see if they're okay with it, but I did it in this week's Torah Tidbits, where it says, let me get it here. Jonathan Pollard, 10,956 plus 7 asterisk days imprisoned. Previously, it had said the number of days in prison, two words. So I took in prison, made it imprisoned, and added the 7 to reflect the fact that he is still, in essence, being kept a prisoner in the United States, not being given permission to come to Israel, and other restrictions that still, after 30 long, long years in jail, give the feel of continued imprisonment. So I share the joy of the reunion and the sadness of the conditions of release. Jonathan was promised so many different things when he was originally arrested, and he was lied to and deceived over and over again, and the United States is still punishing him. I mean, we've spoken about this in the past. I'll just mention the fact that he, as a Jew and an Israeli spy, which wasn't acknowledged till years later, fled to the Israeli embassy in Washington and was turned out. Now, he was turned out, according to what people know, under tremendous amount of pressure from the United States, pressure and threats, but he was turned out. An embassy of a country should never do what they did to him. And the United States should never have done what they did to him, promising him that if he pleads guilty, he will have a light treatment. And that was just defied. And they're receiving a plea of guilty, which stuck, avoided a trial where they would have had to produce certain documents into evidence, which they didn't want to produce and still don't want to produce. If you go to www.jonathanpollard.org, you can read all of the terrible, terrible things that were done to him. So we welcome him to semi-freedom, and at the moment that's the best we can do, I think. Okay, Yaakov sent Malachim to Esav. The end of last week's Sedra, there was a full circle that Yaakov had made. 20 or more years earlier, he had fled, in essence, from Esav, who wanted to kill him. He had other items on his agenda. And he built a family and a wealth, in Love One's house and took leave and is on his way back to his father's house in Eretz Yisrael. But there is the upcoming reunion of the two brothers, and Yaakov honestly does not know how to read Esav. Is Esav still looking to kill Yaakov? Is he still antagonistic? Is he still resentful about Yaakov having acquired the Bechorah, the birthright, and the Bracha, the blessing, or what? So he sends Malachim. Rashi and others take the word Malachim literally, meaning angels. Heavenly angels were enlisted to support Yaakov Avinu and to help him in his upcoming encounter with his estranged brother. And this is based on the fact that Yaakov had a vision of angels in two different camps at the end of Parshat Vayetze, and that's where he got them from, and he sends them to Esav. Unklus and others take the word Malachim to be messengers, human messengers, and that remains an unopened question. What happens, though? He gives instructions to these representatives of him, of his, and he tells them, "Ko tomrun la Adoni la Esav, so you shall tell my master Esav, Ko amar avdecha Yaakov, so says your servant Jacob, im lavan garti, vaicharad ata. I have been living with Lavan, that's Uncle Lavan to you," meaning to both Esav and Yaakov, Lavan was an uncle, their mother Rivka's brother. And he announces that he has been there all this time. "Vayihili shor v'chamor tzon v'eved v'shivcha. I have amassed cattle and donkeys and flocks and servants. V'eshlecha lahagid la'adoni l'mtzochein be'inecha. And I am sending a gift to my master, you, Esav, to find favor in your eyes." The Malachim return to Yaakov, and they say, "We came to your brother, to Esav. V'gam holech likratcha v'arba meot ishimo. And he too is coming towards you," it's not just you going towards him, "with a band of 400 men. Now, another point. Yaakov has sent these Malachim to Esav, his brother, and thus you shall say to Esav, okay, but here the Malachim return and they say, "Banu el achicha el Esav, we have come back from your brother, from Esav," and he is approaching. There is further repetition of this compound of your brother Esav, my brother Esav. And it's not just descriptive, because there is a distinction between your brother and Esav, even though in Yaakov's case that was the same person. Esav is a sworn enemy of Yaakov and his descendants. On the other hand, a brother is a brother. So, as the story unfolds, we see both the Esav and the brother, and the brother offers to join forces with his brother Yaakov, and Yaakov rejects that. Interesting how humbling he made himself, almost humiliated himself, in groveling, literally, at the feet of Esav, for fear of Esav, and appeasement, And yet, when it came to an offer of joining forces, Yaakov adamantly refused the offer and used the excuse that he has many animals with him and they have to walk at a certain pace and you can't rush them. And he didn't want to hold Esav back. But in essence, what the Jewish people have to fear are the Esavs in the world and the brothers among the non-Jewish world who would be very brotherly to us to the point of our extinction as a distinct nation. We would end up assimilating. And that encapsulates the two major fears of the Jewish people throughout the generations: physical annihilation from an enemy and assimilation into the culture of a brother, of a cousin, of a friend. And both are dangers to be wary of. The next pasuk is very, very telling also. Because when Yaakov gets the report of Esav and his 400 men with him, he says, the Torah says, Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. Yaakov was exceedingly afraid. And he is taken to task by many of the commentaries for the word me'od. Yaakov had genuine cause to be afraid. But Vayira Yaakov me'od, that the Torah emphasizes how very, very much afraid he was, there's a problem, because there has to be a point at which you trust in God, that he will be with you, especially in Yaakov's case, when God already promised him that. And true, there are commentaries that point out that Yaakov felt that he didn't have the merit of having lived in Eretz Yisrael these last 20 years plus. He didn't have the merit of honoring his parents that Esav had all that time. And he felt genuinely that he might be in big, big trouble. But the Vayira Yaakov Me'od, and then when it says Vayetzer Lo, this very much bothered him. So some of the commentaries say it bothered him because he was afraid that he would be killed, or afraid that he would have to kill someone. And some say he was bothered because he was so afraid. Because there should be a contained limit to how afraid a person would be. As a result, Yaakov divides his camp into two parts. In case one gets attacked, the other one will be able to escape. He prays to God for help, and he prepares gifts of appeasement to Esav. So he's covering his bases, praying to God, very important thing, of course, preparing for battle, very important, and attempting to avoid battle by appeasement, also important. And he asks God to save him, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Save me from both my brother and from the hand of Esav, as I described earlier. The evening before the encounter between Yaakov and Esav, Vayolen Shem Balaila Hahu, he slept there, and then he takes from his flocks and he prepares the gift for Esav. Izim Matayim Utiashim Esrim, 200 she-goats, also known as nanny goats, and 20 male goats, also known as billy goats, Rechelim Matayim, female sheep, also known as ewes, E-W-E-S, and 20 rams. Gmalim, camels. The wording in the Torah and the interpretation of it as presented by the oral law, not exactly the same, but it seems they were 30 male and 30 female camels. When it came to cows, there were 40 female cows and 10 bulls, male cows, female donkeys 20, and male donkeys 10. That was the gift, and he spaced them out, and he gave instructions on what to say to Esav. Then he crosses the Yabok stream, or river, and he returns to the other side of the river to retrieve some things that he left there. And commentaries say they were small pitchers of oil, flasks of oil, and there's a whole analysis of his going back alone. But the Torah says, Vayevater Yaakov Levado, he was alone, Vayeyovek Ish Imo, and an Ish, a man, did battle with him, wrestled with him, Ad Alot HaShachar, until the morning. I will tell more about this in the second half, and at the beginning of the second half, we will play the song from Shlomo Karlbach, but by Mordechai Ben David singing, with a group of this pasuk, and then we'll continue from there. Before I get a chance to say, we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayishlach, let me just mention also that next week's show will be the pre-Hanukkah show, and Amir Tzashem, the one after that, if I manage to do it, will be the Hanukkah show. So I'm not really discussing Hanukkah now, but get ready for it. And here we go. Hold that thought, or store it in the back of your head. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayishlach. Now for the Shlomo Karlbach song, sung by Mordechai Ben David at some kind of event where loads of people joined him. The words of the song are made up from two different psukim, one in our parsha of Vayishlach and one from the second chapter of Yeshayahu. The common denominator is the word livado, by himself. In Vayishlach, we have the pasuk, Vayivater Yaakov Livado. Yaakov found himself alone. Vayeyovek Ish Imo Ad Alot HaShachar. And he was fought against by, our tradition tells us, the guardian angel of Esav, who tried to do what Esav wanted to do and wasn't able to, and that was to vanquish Yaakov. He managed to injure Yaakov, but not to vanquish him. And this is a very important thing, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes after the song. But right now, the pasuk from here, Vayivater Yaakov Levado, Yaakov was alone, does not have a favorable connotation, because his being alone made him vulnerable to this attack of the Ish, of the guardian angel of Esav. And we actually learn from this that people should not go around at night by themselves, that there's more protection with numbers, and it's not good that you should be livado. Lo tov heyot adam levado. God said it in Bereshit. It is not good for man to be alone. I don't know if I accurately quoted that pasuk, but close enough. Actually, I should never do that. You should always look inside and read a verse in the Torah. It is Torah Shebichtav. It is in writing, and it's in writing for a purpose. And that purpose is to be read. After Gan Eden and creation, there it is. Vayomer Hashem Elokim Lo Tov Hayot Adam Livado. It is not good for man to be alone. Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. I will make for him a helpmate. That's not part of the song, but it could be part of the focus of the word Livado. Vayivater Yaakov Livado. Not a good idea. The pasuk in Yeshayahu speaks at first of all kind of arrogance among people and objects of nature that are worshipped, and speaks of the time when they will all be humbled, and v'niskav Hashem levado bayom hahu, God alone will be exalted on that day. When the world recognizes the nothingness of all the other forms of worship except the worship of the one God of Israel. And there the word Livado has a favorable connotation. Shlomo Carlbach put both of them together in the following song, Enjoy and Ponder.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah.
Okay, now, let's continue in a different vein. After, at the end of this little portion of Vayishlach, the Torah tells us something. Obviously, Yaakov came back from his alone battle with Sar Shel Esav, having prevailed but walked away injured. The Torah says, Vayizrach lo ha-shemesh, the sun shone for him in the morning, kasher avar et Penuel, when he passed the place called Penuel, v'hu tzolea al yerecho, and he was limping from the hip injury. Al kain, I'm giving literal translation now, al kain, therefore, lo yochalu v'nei Yisrael, the children of Israel, do not eat, at Gid Hanashe, the sciatic nerve, it's complicated. It's in the hind quarter of an animal. It's on the thigh, in the hip area. It refers to that nerve and the branches thereof and the vessels that innervate the area. Asher al kaf hayarech, which is on the spoon of the hip. I imagine that's the shape of the pelvis at that point. Ad hayom hazeh, ki naga b'chaf yerech Yaakov begid hanasheh. Because that is where Yaakov was injured. Now, there are a total of 3 mitzvot out of 613 in the book of Bereshit. The book of Bereshit has 12 sedras. It is the largest book of the 5 books of the Torah. It has only 3 mitzvot. The 610 others are in Shemot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim. Just in contrast, Devarim, I think, has 242 mitzvot. Vayikra, 200 mitzvot. Shemot and Bamidbar are a more modest number. But Bereshit, only 3. We've had the first 2, be fruitful and multiply, have children, raise a family, and Brit Milah, circumcision of males from the day, the 8th day onward, preferably the 8th day. The only prohibition in the book of Bereshit is this one, known as Gid Hanasheh. And we'll keep calling it Gid Hanasheh, or the Gid. Gimel Yud Dalet. The commentaries explain, the oral Torah explains, that this is a mitzvah that was given at Sinai with all the rest of the mitzvot, and it was placed in context here to teach us why God prohibited the eating of the Gid Hanasheh. Let me quickly do the practical side of the Gid Hanasheh. In the United States, and probably other places too, it is a common practice to sell the entire hind quarter of an animal after slaughter, obviously, to a non-Jewish, non-kosher outlet, because the requirement to remove the Gid Hanasheh and everything that belongs to it is a very difficult thing to do. It needs extreme expert hands and knowledge, and it is called, by the way, Nikur, in Hebrew, trabering in Yiddish, which became like an English word also in a dictionary. But when you talk English and you refer to the removal of the Gid HaNasheh, you call it trabering. And it's not economically feasible to do it, so the entire hind quarter, which in essence constitutes removal of the Gid HaNasheh from the rest of the animal, permits the rest of the animal to be eaten, and profits whatever profit the hind quarter gets from the non-kosher market. And since the hind quarter has some very specialty cuts, tenderloin steak and porterhouse steak and a few others, I don't remember the names, it probably fetches a good return. In Israel, with a much smaller non-Jewish, non-kosher market, I emphasize non-Jewish because you can't sell anything that we're not allowed to eat to a fellow Jew, even if they profess not to keep the mitzvot. But a non-Jewish market can get it. Here, they do nikur, trabering, and in certain fancy, fancy hotels and restaurants, those cuts, which usually are not available to kosher consumers, are. In any event, let's get back to on track. The Torah could have written at some point later in the Torah, thou shalt not eat the Gid HaNasheh. And as a mitzvah, it would join the prohibition of eating nevela, meat of an animal that died other than by ritual slaughter, trefa, an animal attacked or other way injured before slaughter, in a certain kind of injury that would result in its death anyway. So even if you give it shechita, you're not allowed to eat it, and the kosher animals and non-kosher animals, what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat, milk and meat, and Gid HaNasheh would be one of those mitzvot, removing of the blood, etc. Instead, the Torah put the mitzvah prohibiting Gid HaNasheh in the form of a story inserted into the story in Parshat Vayishlach. It makes it rare, because usually mitzvot of this type are presented as mitzvot and prohibitions without a context. And here a context was purposely placed, so that when you read of the prohibition of Gid HaNasheh, you see that it is a reminder of the battle that Yaakov had with the Ish, the guardian angel of Esav, which represents the perennial battle between Esavs of the world and Yaakov, which means the Jewish people. And we have a long history of suffering at the hands of the Esavs of the world. I mean that genealogically as well as philosophically, if that's the right word. And it means, reminds us, that even though we will be injured from time to time, and sometimes very seriously, we will come out of the encounter alive, limping. And there is a rising of the sun that will heal us completely, which represents the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption. That's a lot to carry for one mitzvah, Gid HaNasheh, but that's why it's there. Now, I found an interesting thing in the Mishnah, which I would like to share with you. The Mishnah, six orders of the Mishnah, six, who knows six? I know six. Six are the orders of the Mishnah, Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. The fifth Seder is Kodashim, sacred foods, but it has a volume called Chulin for the foods we're allowed to eat, not in the context of sacrificial offerings, but regular food. And among the chapters, I think there are 12 in Chulin. Don't take my word on that. I'd have to check it. There is one chapter, chapter 7, that deals with Gid Hanasha. And the last Mishnah in that chapter raises a strange point. The Mishnah first says, Noheg b'tahora, b'tahora, this mitzvah prohibiting the Gid Hanasha applies to that of kosher animals, mammals, ve'ena noheg b'tameya, but not kosher animals. Hold your question. The obvious question is, but if you're not allowed to eat a non-kosher animal, then what's the difference whether the Gid Hanasha is forbidden from there? The whole animal is forbidden. Good question. But we're not getting there yet. That statement, Noheg Batahora Ve'ena Noheg Batamea, is attributed to what we call the anonymous first opinion in the Mishnah, known as the Tana Kama. It's likely that it's not just an individual, but a whole group of people who took that position. In contrast, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, Af b'tameya, it applies even in a non-kosher animal. Now, for the sake of brevity, you'll need to create your own hypothetical situation where a person has to eat non-kosher meat for some reason, a health reason, obviously, to save his life. And the question is there an additional prohibition of the Gid Hanasha? That's one application of that distinction. But that's not the point. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda defends his opinion that the prohibition of Gid Hanasha applies to non-kosher animals as well. V'halo mi b'nei Yaakov ne'esar Gid Hanasha. It was from the sons of Yaakov which the prohibition originated, as it says, Al kein lo yochlu v'nei Yisrael et Gid Hanasha. And therefore, since v'adayin behemat tameya muteret lahen, in those days of the family of Yaakov, which preceded revelation at Sinai and the giving of the Torah, non-kosher animals were permitted. Whether they ate them or not is not the issue, but they weren't forbidden. Therefore, he says, if this mitzvah originates from the children of Yaakov, then the prohibition of Gid Hanasha should apply to non-kosher animals as well. The Mishnah is not finished yet. It continues, Omru lo. So the rest of the sages said to him, B'Sinai ne'emar, this mitzvah came from Sinai, and therefore it applies only to kosher animals, since non-kosher animals were off our list of foods that we eat. Ela shenichtav b'mekomo. But they were written. This prohibition was written in context, as I said before, but that's not the place of its origin. It came from Sinai. The Rambam, in his commentary to Mishnah, considers this a major, major principle of how Torah is taught to us. So it is a matter of emunat chachamim, belief in the chain of tradition, when it teaches us that even though in chapter 32 of the book of Genesis, Bereshit, we have Al kein lo yochlu v'nei Yisrael et Gid Hanasha, the mitzvah was from Sinai, post revelation at Sinai, Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, and it's placed here for the reasons that I explained before to give it a context so that we have a real grasp of why the Gid Hanasha is forbidden. There are many mitzvot in the Torah that don't have a context. There are many mitzvot that have a context naturally, like the laws of the Seder night, the matzah and Korban Pesach and Chametz and things like that. This one was given a context by God in dictating to Moshe where to place it in the Torah in order to teach us the reason, which is on the rare side. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.